Better Leaders, Better Schools, episode number 11.
Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where school leaders go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top influencers in education. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Daniel Bauer.
Look, words of advice. Number one, don't be too tough on yourself. Don't be afraid to have some fun at school too. A wise man once said to me, take your job seriously, not yourself.
Hi, this is Daniel Bauer from Better Leaders, Better Schools. I help school leaders create a winning culture, focus on the essential, and lead with courage and integrity. The blog and podcast was made specifically for you to help you meet your leadership potential. Get more content and resources at betterleadersbetterschools.com. Better Leaders, do you need some winning leadership phrases? Download my free gift to you, The 15 Phrases of Effective School Leaders. The 15 Phrases of Effective School Leaders is an MP3 where I share a variety of phrases that have served me so well over the years in all my leadership positions. Get it now for free by texting PHRASES to 33444. That's PHRASES, PHRASES, to 33444. Or by visiting the website betterleadersbetterschools.com. Today's podcast is brought to you by audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at betterleadersbetterschools.com/book. There are over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Start your free 30-day trial and grab that free book right now at betterleadersbetterschools.com/book. And now it's time for some 5-star reviews. Alex M. Barron writes, "Just so excellent. Leadership is so critical in every fact of education, and I'm glad that these two are bringing that to the fore. I especially love DeBoro's point at minute 11 about allowing people to make mistakes and supporting them afterward. Beautiful stuff. Keep it up, guys." Thank you, Alex, for that review. LJ Grateful writes, "Podcast number 4, Daniel and DeBoro. Really enjoyed the rich discussion, easy, thoughtful exchange of ideas, and the pragmatic approach to implementing immediate changes in one's routine. Love the 3 helpful tips of the day." Thanks again for those 5-star reviews. Not only do they make us feel good, but it helps us stay in the forefront of iTunes and relevant. And it also helps spread our message of better leadership to an even wider audience. Thanks again for the reviews, and now for the show. Today's guest is Clayton Reedy, the principal of Dalmeny Public School, located in southwestern suburbs of Sydney, Australia. Dalmeny, a K-6 school with over 1,000 students and 80 staff, is Clayton's 4th principalship, the first being Mount Hunter Public School, a small country school of 56 students near Camden outside Sydney. Clayton began teaching in 1991 and has built his leadership experience across a range of settings and executive positions. In addition to these school-based roles, Clayton has been the president of the Liverpool Primary Principals Council for 3 years, and has spent time on the secondment with the New South Wales Department of Education in a number of principal support roles, the most recent being with the High Performance Directorate, assisting principals to implement a range of reforms around budgeting, localized decision-making processes, and school planning. Clayton believes in focused, differentiated professional learning for his staff to improve lesson delivery and maximize success for students. Dalmeny's professional development structures are a model for many colleagues. When not at work, Clayton enjoys traveling, rugby league football, go to the Tigers, V8 supercars, go Ford, and watching cricket. He is married to Nikki, also a school principal, and has 5 children, all boys, who keep him very grounded and very busy. Ladies and gents, may I present to you Clayton Reedy.
Yeah, hi, Daniel. Nice to chat to you from the other side of the world, and fantastic to be with you. And congratulations on your work. I've enjoyed the podcast enormously, and so thank you for sharing and the work you're putting into that. I feel honoured to be a part of this process as well, and I certainly hope some of the insights and the experiences that I can share, your listeners find valuable. So thank you too.
Appreciate it, Clayton. I know everyone's going to find this interview very valuable. And one of the things I want to share to the Better Leaders, Better Schools community is just the fact of how fun it's been to create Better Leaders, Better Schools. Clayton has been somebody that's been a part of the community since day one. He's reached out via email. We've chatted over the phone before. And that's the beauty of where we're at now in terms of connecting with technology. Here I am making a friend, making a professional relationship with a guy halfway across the world that I've never met, but has tons of wisdom. And we're bringing that to you today through the podcast. So Clayton, what inspired you to pursue a career in education?
Good question. Like a lot of people, it began with teachers that I really, really loved at school. We have no middle schooling here in Australia. We go straight from primary school, which I guess is similar to elementary, which is K to 6, and then we go into high schools, which is 7 to 12. I had teachers that I loved right from the beginning, especially in high school, and always wanted to be able to pass that love of teaching and that love of education on to kids that would be under my care. I was always going to go into high school teaching, straight out of school, straight out of uni. But right at the last minute, decided to change to primary school teaching. Did a course for primary school teaching, and absolutely loved that. Received full time employment the moment I finished my education, which was outstanding. And the rest is history, and have just loved every minute of it.
Hey, so let's unpack that a little bit in terms of the teachers you loved. What were some of those characteristics or specific things they did to make school such a wonderful environment for you?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, absolutely. Look, they still come to mind. And number one, they engaged, they challenged, but they just made school fun as well. I have a great sense of humor, or like to think I do. I'm not sure everybody else appreciates my jokes as much as I do. But really, really just connected with people, just connected with kids. And that's what it was. That was the hook that got me and right through my career as a beginning teacher, as a classroom teacher, and even now as a principal of sort of going on 14 years experience as a principal, engaging people, connecting with people, getting people to feel easy, encouraging, involving them in the decisions and the work that we do is something that's proven to be a great success.
So let me ask you this then, Clayton. In my position as assistant principal, I know that I struggle with easily getting overwhelmed with all the tasks that need to occur on a day-to-day basis. And if I'm not very careful, I'm stuck almost in a prison in my office, and it's very hard to get out and connect and engage. So what are the things that you've learned through your experience to help you connect and engage with your staff?
Look, I understand exactly where you're coming from. And there are days when I cannot get out of the office. And whilst I believe that that no person is irreplaceable, the role of the principal, there are just some things the principal needs to do. And I actually, I'm like you, I'm very conscious of the fact that I don't want to be stuck in the office. And I get up and I go. And it's not only with the staff as well in terms of getting out and talking to them, but it's kids as well,
right?
And it's just nice to go and remind ourselves exactly why I am sitting in the office. That there's over 1,000 little ones out there. That's the purpose of our work. And I'll say to my office staff, I'm out. I'm going for half an hour. I need a kid fix, and I'll just go into the classrooms or I'll go and do playground duties and have a wander through. And I do the same with my staff. Easygoing. I hope approachable, transparent style of leadership that I have encourages people to talk with me, and I do that by setting an example. And it may just be, I'm sure your intro is very similar to mine, that sometimes it's you know, it's 3 foot high. So I'll actually pick up my in tray and take it into the staff room during lunchtime, and I'll sign stuff and go through my mail, and I'll do it in the staff room with the teachers there. And so it's an opportunity for me to talk to them, how they're going, how their kids are going, and just touch base in a nice personal way.
I like that a lot, because just because you have an office with your name on it doesn't mean that you have to be stuck there. And so you sounds like you create a mobile office where you meet the staff where they're at, and some tasks that you could sort of do without thinking too much about them, things that you need to sign or whatever, you can do that in their presence and still connect with your staff.
Yeah, look, I do. And Daniel, too, I'm very lucky, and I'm, as I have mentioned to you a couple of times when we've connected previously, we're working on developing a relationship with Door Elementary. A shout out to Liz. Hello, Liz. Hope you're listening. and one of the things that's very different between our school system is I'm very lucky to have an extensive executive staff with me. I have, you mentioned that you're an assistant principal. From what I can work out, that's the equivalent of our deputy principal. It's second in charge in the school. And I'm lucky enough to have two deputy principals who both have no teaching load at all. So when it comes to administration of the school and the things that need to be done, I've got two people, a right and a left hand, who I trust enormously, who do a fantastic job, that I can throw certain aspects of the admin to them. And I also have six, what we call assistant principals, which is the next level of executive down from a deputy, and they have a full teaching load. And so there's a large executive team there that help me with the administration of the school, and also allows me to free up some of my time to do the kinds of things I'm doing with you today, which is wonderful.
Yes. You know, you talked about your engaging, connecting, your vulnerable, transparent leadership style. I'm wondering how you developed this style. And, you know, sometimes leaders think that they have to have it all together, that they have to have all the answers. Personally, I don't think that's true, that you need that, and feel free to push back. But yeah. What are those steps you take, and what would you tell people that maybe struggle with vulnerability and transparency? How do you develop it? Like, how do you make that on a reality on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, great question. And I agree, absolutely agree 100% with what you were saying. Look, I think that there's a human quality that comes with being vulnerable enough to say to people, look, I'm not sure what the answer is there. I'm happy to work on it with you. There's been times where staff have come to me with some questions, and I've said, look, I'm not sure, but look, here's a person you can talk to, and when you find the answer, come and let me know. I think that particular part of my leadership style is just, it's a part of my DNA. It's just a part of who I am. But that doesn't mean that people can't develop those skills or develop that style if that's what they feel comfortable with. It comes down to trust, trusting your staff, having them trust you. And I also think it comes down to a certain kind of confidence. You've mentioned that some leaders think they have to be all things to all people. And look, I'm of the belief that whilst I am the principal of the school, it's my philosophy of educational leadership is you're actually in a position of service.
Right.
And you're there to serve those children, to serve that community, and to serve those teachers so that they can produce the best organization that they can, that I'm leading, that we work on together. And I think that when you have that sort of confidence and that understanding of your position, being able to show a bit of vulnerability and a humanity, a human touch to the work that you do, I think builds that mutual respect, and you're halfway there. Yeah.
So we talked about some of your strengths and some of the things that make you a great leader, but let's dive into what you consider your worst leadership mistake. This is a very interesting question to me, and I think that's because our mistakes really become great lessons learned. So what was that worst? Yeah, what was that worst leadership mistake, and what did you learn from it?
Look, it would have been when I was my worst one was probably when I was a deputy principal. It was 4 years officially, but a little part of that, about 18 months of that, I spent on secondment at Mount Hunter as principal, as you've already mentioned. And look, I look back on it now and I think it's a mistake that that a lot of people would make. And there were complaints, I guess, that teachers would make. And I think my mistake was taking those too personally. Mm. I saw it as the fact that they were not comfortable with something, not happy with something, had some concerns about whatever it is. And look, Daniel, I can't even remember the details of it.
Right.
But that's not important either. It was more the fact that they wanted to express to me, and instead of me listening and understanding and working out what was driving those concerns, I saw it as a reflection on my leadership and I took it too personally. And I think that one of the great characteristics that good leaders have is an ability to reflect on their own performance and the way that they've managed situations, both internally by themselves, whether that's, you know, at 3 a.m. when you can't think, or on the way home in the car or the train, or when you're in the shower going to work. I think that's really important. But it's also great to have someone you can rely on, to really rely on, to say, look, I've gone over this in my mind. Talk to me. What could I have done differently that would have got a better outcome? And when you have that kind of relationship with yourself, firstly, but also with other educational leaders that you trust, I think that's really important. So my worst mistake was basically to take things too personally. And blame myself and see it that they had a lack of respect for me. And it was certainly a big learning curve.
So this strategy of reflecting on your performance, is there like a worksheet, a book, some type of meditation that you go through, or how, you know, what is it that you do, Clayton, to reflect on your performance then and sort of evaluate, you know, if it was needs improvement, I guess?
Yeah, great question. Look, we have a series of, as a school and as a department, New South Wales is the state that Sydney is the capital of, It's a large state in terms of educational bureaucracy. There are formal processes that we need to go through in terms of reflecting on performance.
Okay.
But they're kind of more for the big ticket items. You know, how has your year been? How is your school traveling and things? I think the day-to-day reflection is just something. It's just a way of debriefing with myself and occasionally with others. I don't always do it with other people. Sometimes it's one of my deputies. Sometimes it's one of my teachers. Sometimes it's a parent where we've had some concerns and issues with their child. And I've been honest enough to say, look, we're on the same page here. I've done this, but I need you to talk to me about whether you think as a mum or a dad that I've approached this the right way to get the best result for your little one. And again, it's that openness and that transparency that really builds trust. Look, in terms of going through things, I love the work of Stephen Covey. I don't think there's a leader anywhere in the Western world that hasn't come across his work. And that was an eye-opener for me, because it talked about those personal victories, the stuff that you needed to do internally before you could lead and manage other people effectively. And that was a real light bulb moment in my career when I studied his work. And I kept coming back to that moral and professional compass that I have to say, look, was that did that performance, did the way I deal with that, did that bring the best outcome for all of the people involved, particularly the students, of course, which is why we're here.
Right. So Stephen Covey, he's the author of probably his most famous work was The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. Was that the book that the light bulb went off in your mind, or was there another one that you would like to suggest?
Yeah, no, look, that was it. And I'm more than happy to send copies of this over to for your listeners or for yourself to have as a resource. Our department, our state department, actually produced a few years ago now what they call the Leadership Capability Framework, and it is still one of the best pieces of professional reading that I have engaged in, not only for me but for my executive team as well, in terms of improving practice. It talks about It talks about the inner circles that sit really nicely with the private victories. It talks about the inner circles of what you need to reflect on within yourself, and there needs to be an internal strength. And it talks about ways of developing that, and before you can do the stuff that's the business of our business, the organising curriculum, the developing classes, putting syllabuses into practice, staffing schools, etc., which it's a quality document, and I still refer to it regularly.
That's really amazing, because oftentimes, and maybe it's my inexperience in school leadership here, but I've yet to meet a school principal in the States that have said, you know, the district produces document. I still refer back to, and it was such a quality document. So just kudos to where you're at and the way the state and the nation has developed you. And it sounds like that this document really does something that I truly believe in, that all leadership starts with self-leadership. And you were talking about your inner circle, and just how you take care of yourself before you could even, like you said, be in a position of service to others, as a principal of your school.
Yeah, look at, it's not everything that comes out is wonderful.
Right.
You know, quite often it just means a little bit more work, you know. But that is one that is simply outstanding. And I still use it to this day to help develop leadership goals with my executive team and teachers too, for that matter. But it is about leadership. And I would certainly be happy to share that with you, so that you can post it as you've invited me to write a blog post, and perhaps I could build something around that for you. But something that has been absolutely outstanding, and as I said, it really dovetails beautifully with that previous work that I'd done. Yeah.
So one thing maybe we can do is link up in the show notes this resource that people can get their hands on right away and start to dig into. But maybe then that follow-up blog post could be personally your insights into the document, how you've used it, how it's impacted you, and possibly that's one way you could help serve our community here.
That sounds fantastic. Very, very happy to do it. Yeah.
Let me ask you this, Clayton. Knowing what you know now, what would you tell yourself as a novice principal?
Number one, don't be too hard on yourself. Look, as I said, reflecting on that, those mistakes of days gone by, and look, don't get me wrong, I don't mean by any stretch that I'm the perfect principal now. I don't make as many silly mistakes, but, number one, don't be too hard on yourself would be the number one thing. I hope when I say this that it doesn't get lost in the translation, but people will do silly things. People are people. They're human beings. They make mistakes. They do silly things. And the behavioralists will tell you that every behavior is enacted out because it's having a need being met. And if you can keep that in mind, it helps to understand what's driving people. Mm. And that also helps bring an understanding of the situation, and therefore helping an educational leader to be an enabler to assist those people to work through the issues that they've got, or to support them through those concerns, and to take some responsibility as well.
Clayton, what sets you apart from other leaders in education? What would you consider your secret sauce?
I've taken on a range of things outside of my school, which I also don't want your listeners to think that I'm never there. I pride myself on being an on the ground, instructional leader, as well as the kind of leader that supports others and sets an example. But I've built a real educational knowledge of not only processes and procedures, but what works in supporting people. And I think that through the work that I've done with Covey, through the work that I've done through the Leadership Capability Framework, plus in my personal life, I have an understanding of what drives people. And if you can if you can understand that, if you can work with people, if you can be that visible, transparent, honest, open leader that others want to follow, that's the goal. And it has been a goal of mine. I haven't always been like this. But certainly what sets me apart, I understand people. I understand what drives them. And if I don't, I don't assume that I do. I ask questions. I talk to them. I look, I watch, I support. And I think that that's what helps me. I love your catchphrase that I know you borrowed from someone. Yes. Of everybody wins when the leader gets better.
Yeah.
I love that, and it is so true. And I see it every day, not only with myself but with my colleagues, with my executive team. And I think that belief is what separates me from others.
Yeah, I stole that from the head pastor of the church I attend, Bill Hybels.
Sure.
And he envisioned and put together this thing called the Global Leadership Summit. Yes. And you got that report.
Yes, yeah. I've read your feedback. Yep, thank you.
So I hope you enjoyed those. Yes. But I stole that phrase from him. And he's an exceptional leader himself, and I love that idea, because that's the thing. And going back again to just developing yourself, that all leadership starts with self-leadership. It's a common theme. Everybody wins when a leader gets better. And what you shared that's so beautifully articulated, I'm in a position of service. It can't be about you as a leader. I think it's fine to think about the legacy you want to leave and how you want to impact an organization, but it's not about you. It's never about you. And it's about how are you serving everybody there, the staff, the kids, the families, the community. That's your lasting legacy. And when you could develop yourself, everybody wins. That's right, when a leader gets better.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree wholeheartedly. And it's been a personal philosophy of mine for a long time. And that's just sort of something that, as I said, it comes from inside, but you, like all philosophies, I guess, they get tweaked and improved and changed along the way. I'd like to think that the basic building blocks of the kind of educator I wanted to be hasn't changed since I was a 21-year-old coming straight out of university into a classroom for the first time. But, of course, if you don't grow and improve, you'll stay exactly where you were. So, yeah. But, yeah, look, I agree. I hope that's the kind of model. I hope that's the kind of model that I am for my whole staff. And I value that staff, everybody from the ladies that make the lunches in the canteen, to our office staff, to our what we call a general assistant, which is like a janitor, I guess.
Okay.
Through to my most experienced teachers, yeah.
So what is it you do to avoid being stagnant? How do you continue to sharpen your leadership blade?
Yeah, or as Covey puts it, sharpening the saw.
That's right.
Yeah, good question. I'm the kind of person that needs to keep moving all of the time. And I don't mean, necessarily moving from school to school, even though I have been in a number of schools. That's kind of just the way it's worked. I need new projects, new ideas, new things to get involved in. I need that to keep me energized and to keep me focused. And so I've actually built some professional development structures and strategies for my whole staff. Sure. Around that kind of belief as well, to support teachers who would like to move in new and interesting and different directions. Not ignoring the core fundamentals of reading and writing and adding up and providing a safe, classroom where well-being is at the forefront. I don't mean, neglecting the importance of those aspects of our work, but I need to keep moving. I can't stand still, and that's just who I am. I'm not the kind of person that could teach. There's teachers out there that have taught the same grade in the same school for 20 years. Looking good on them if they can do it and maintain a focus and build the relationship with people around them that, where that's still being successful. But that's kind of not the way that I can operate. Yeah. So look, you know, the relationships that we've, you know, developed with Door Elementary, even the relationship that the professional relationship that you and I are developing now, it's come because I really love new ideas, I love new things, and I love getting my feet into those kinds of things and jumping in, and it keeps me focused and keeps me motivated.
Can you dig in a little bit and maybe share specifically what you do, maybe one example with your staff then, some of these things that you've built to help them to keep moving and to keep developing?
Yeah, sure. Look, we have a very new to our school specific plan of professional development for teachers, and if I can go back one step, I've seen the best and worst of professional learning for staff. I've seen where everyone is treated like a factory, where they come into the staff meeting, they're talked at for an hour, and then they say, go and do this in your classrooms. And of course that, you know, is very, very limited, you know, sort of, I believe, in its effectiveness. The other thing too is where everybody is treated as the same. It does not provide opportunities for our really experienced, our expert teachers, our master teachers to show their skills, and they still need to be professionally developed as well as our teachers who've been in the classroom for 6 months that have different needs. And there's a whole range in between. I've mentioned that we have a large executive team, so they have a different set of professional needs. And so we have all of these groups within the school that are all, it's like I often refer to the staff as my class. And just right. As you stand in front of a classroom and you know that kids bring different backgrounds, different responsibilities, different skill sets. They have their own challenges they need to overcome. A staff is exactly the same. Mm. And whilst I'm certainly not saying we get it right all of the time, the professional development model provides opportunities for everybody to be moving forward. We have differentiated professional learning plans, and again, I'm happy to provide copies of these for you, for your site, and for your listeners. That brings together. We have school plans and strategic directions. Our core knowledge that staff just need to know. We're undergoing a whole range of syllabus of curriculum review, and new syllabuses coming out in New South Wales at the moment. And that teachers just need to know that you can't get away from that. That's just the curriculum they need to know. So that's one part of it. We also have the department's professional learning policies, our professional development frameworks, and teaching standards and documents that we need to work with around professional development. But then we marry that with individual professional learning needs, their own interests and their goals, and their individual level of experience and/or expertise. And we develop very differentiated professional learning plans for teachers. One aspect of which is I set aside a certain amount of my budget every year for professional development. And out of that professional development budget that we get, I actually allow teachers to apply to do special projects. And what those special projects are, it may just be an opportunity for teachers who have always wanted to get into gifted and talented education, for example, but have just never had the means to do that. Or it may be teachers that really love what the school down the road or the teacher in the classroom next door is doing, and there just hasn't been a formal time to build some professional development around that. The special projects, it sounds formal in terms of application. It's a one-page thing where the teachers just say, I'd like this much money to do this. This is how it will tick boxes in terms of my own professional development. This right. is how it fits into the school's overall plan. And this is what I would like to do with the money. These are the outcomes that I'll get from it. And so as a result, we have, at the moment, we have 20 special projects that are wow. running across the school. It's a fairly large staff. 20 special projects that are running that cover everything from technology to music, to performing arts, to well-being, to mathematics, to English, to history and geography, a whole range of special projects where where teachers have the time and the support to build these skills within themselves. And then we have processes where that knowledge is shared with other teachers so everybody wins.
That's incredible. That sounds exactly like something we experimented with this year at Brooks, my school. We created this team called PD at Brooks for professional development at Brooks. But same thing, a very simple application. Teachers applied for any type of professional development around our nation. And the goal was, okay, they're going to get developed individually, but when they come back to the school, you need to give back to the staff. And we as the administration have led professional development for the last 3 years. And this year, wisely, we handed that over to the teachers and specifically the ones that went through the PD at Brooks process. And they are in charge, you know, with consultation from the formal leadership of the school, but they are in charge of providing everything in a differentiated way to our current faculty. And that was easily the best decision we've ever made. This summer, I've never seen the teachers really rally together over professional development as I had this year. It really set the stone and set the tone, and we hit the ground running. And it was fantastic to see. So I love to hear that you're doing something very similar.
Yeah, it sounds very similar, which is outstanding. Has had great success, and it generates so much enthusiasm on the staff, and you probably felt that as well. I've been chatting with my executive team, my leadership team, about how we might go through sharing this work, you talked about how, you know, sharing it across your current faculty. We toyed with a few ways that we might do that, and we're sort of thinking that we might workshop it. We have professional development meetings, staff meetings, once a week, not the communication administration ones. I'm talking about just for professional development. There's an hour every week that we set aside for that. And I'm actually thinking that what we might do is, excuse me, for people who are doing who have done a special project, that we might just provide a synopsis of that, and the teachers will run it over 2 or 3 weeks so that people can really get their teeth into it. They can choose which one they would like to know more about, and they can go and we'll allow people to workshop that across those afternoons of professional development to really get into it. How we did it, what the results were, this is the products that the kids have been producing, this is what we've learned, this is what the kids have found, this is what our communities loved about it. If I did it again, you know, I'd do this differently.
Sure.
And support teachers to then really take that stuff that interests them and to run that in their classrooms too.
What I love what you're doing, and this is, you know, I'm speaking to the audience now, Better Leaders, Better Schools audience, avoid at all costs doing a one size fits all professional development, and do exactly as Clayton is doing. Individually pour into and develop your teachers, and then allow them to offer that to the community. Give choice where it's appropriate and applicable, and just see the, like he said, the momentum, the energy, the enthusiasm around teaching and learning that will be caused as a result. I don't know why this is. We ask teachers to differentiate instruction in the classroom, and then we go and teach to them. You called your staff, your class, and we'll do it in the same exact way for all our staff. That's wrong. Let's not do it that way. Give them a differentiated opportunity to learn and develop themselves. Give them choice in the matter.
Absolutely. I would add my support to everything you just said. I couldn't have said it better. Look, other aspects that we have around that professional development, I'm not sure how it works in the States, but we have our English, math, science, history, geography type syllabuses.
Sure.
As I said, we've just undergone a whole range of renewing those. So there's been new syllabuses that have come out, and we've actually moved away from what we called committees, where we used to have teachers that would be on the English committee. So they would be responsible for running professional development and getting that out. And we've actually thrown all of that out. And we've gone with a model which we call focus groups. And yes, there's still focus groups around English, math, science, Aboriginal education, which is a big part of our work that we do in Australia, student wellbeing, staff welfare. We have focus groups that kind of have a shelf life. They come together when they're needed, and they will stay as a focus group provided there's a need for that. And some things are a real focus for a little while, and then they just become a part of, well, this is just what we do. There doesn't need to be that real focus on it. But the main difference is with our focus groups is when I develop these focus groups, you know, say, for example, we had our focus group on history, I said to my staff, this is open for anybody to be a member of, but do not come onto this group unless you have an absolute passion for that aspect of your work. Huh. Because one of the things I found with committees where you sort of divided the staff up and you said, well, you've got to go here and you've got to go here and you go there is that too often committees and the work that they were doing were being bogged down with the teachers who said, well, look, all of this is really wonderful, but I don't have enough, you know, meter rulers in my classroom to teach kids measurement. You know, look, that's important, but I wanted really passionate people to drive these curriculum areas of our school. And so far that's been really successful as well. So we've got focus groups that are driven by people who are passionate about that area that really does move us as a school forward. If you only teach mathematics because you have to, if you don't teach it because you've got a real passion and a right. desire to do it well, don't join the maths focus group. That was the message. And I know that sounds a little black and white and a little harsh, but the end result is people are where they want to be, and therefore they're driving those areas of the school forward because they have that real special, that need. I've said it before, that passion for that area. And that's working really, really well. One of the other things I've introduced this year as well is, and it kind of fits as a part of this professional development, you know, puzzle that we put together, is we actually have areas of expertise, and it started as a nomination process. So we actually had where teachers could nominate, you know, say, for example, they had a real level of expertise or experience in English or an aspect of English or in music. It can be something as narrow as art, or it could be something as broad as differentiating curriculum for kids. And so teachers could nominate themselves. And this is where part of how we're looking after our expert and our experienced teachers, that they would be available to help other staff in that area if needed. Now, because teachers being teachers, they do a great job but don't like putting themselves forward, we also had where you could nominate a colleague. So if you were working with someone who next door to you was a great help in a particular area of geography, for example, you could nominate them. And you could jot it down on a form. I would go to that teacher and say, look, you've been nominated, which is wonderful. Are you happy to help colleagues if they need it? Every time I went to them, they were really embarrassed, but deep down they were really tickled. They loved it. And all of them were happy to help. So we have, and I collated those. So we have these areas of expertise that is a resource of staff members who have great ideas and experience across the range of everything that we do. And so, for example, if you then are doing a special project on something and you want some experience or some assistance, you want to go and teach with a teacher, you want to see some demonstration lessons or have that teacher watch you with your work, you have got a ready-made resource that you can go to. And that has been fantastic because we all love learning from others. But for those expert and experienced teachers, it's really given them a kudos and reinvigorated their approach to their work as well in a lot of cases.
That's great. And lighting that fire and rekindling that fire within teachers is sometimes very needed. I like so much about the focus groups you just described. I'm going to highlight two things. One is that you're letting teachers not be stuck in a box. So I may be passionate and an expert in teaching math, but if I also have a love for history, I can help and be a part of that focus group. I'm not just a math teacher. I could teach in a number of ways, or at least improve the curriculum in a number of ways, number one. Number two, this idea of the nominations is incredible. And what it does there to me is it recognizes peers that are really helping out the staff, the teaching community. There's recognition there, and then it's also providing a resource. So if you need help in X, Y, and Z in terms of the school, go to this person. They're incredible. It's sometimes hard to stand up and say, you know, this is what I'm the best at. But when your peer says, you know what, I've worked with Clayton over the years, and he's tremendously helped me in this area, check out his work there. I think that's fantastic what you're doing with the focus groups.
Yeah, thank you. Look, that's been one of the real success stories of this year and something that I've implemented. I've only been at Dalmeny for a little over 12 months now. I think it's about 14 or 15 months. And so that's something that I've implemented almost from day one. Once they just got to know me a little bit, and sure, you know, we did all of that, you know, yeah, we can trust this guy, he's not a maniac, you know. That was something that was a real focus for us for this year, and that's worked really well. And look, just the final piece of that puzzle, if I may, we do have teachers. It's part of what we need to do as employers of the Department of Education is we need to do professional goal setting. I always did it anyway. So when it was brought in as a statewide policy, it was just a simple move for us. But those goals that teachers do, you can see how this individualized professional learning it really supports those goals. And I actually, my assistant principals and deputies who I've already mentioned, they actually supervise each grade. And the grades vary. Some grades have got four teachers on the grade. Some have seven or eight, just depending on the size of the grade and the class size that goes with that. And I've given those assistant principals and the deputies a grade budget that can only be spent on professional development. So okay, if they've got a teacher that's got a goal that hasn't been met by, you know, one of these other ways, the assistant principal can just say, well, look, I am happy to support your professional learning. And it might be some money to put a casual teacher on the class for the day so they can visit. Might be to send them to a course. It might be to purchase some professional readings. That money can be used. And that's where our areas of expertise nominations have been outstanding too, because the staff have that list of ready, willing and able people who have that experience and that knowledge that my executive team can bring those people together. They've got that money and those means to bring those two people together on a more formal basis to tick those professional boxes.
So let's switch gears a little bit and move from the professional to the personal. You have a wonderful wife, Nikki, and five boys, if I'm correct.
That's right.
How do you, and both of you are principals, so you're both very busy. How do you manage the stress and balance the demands of the job, but still have time for family to be present with them, to connect with them?
Yeah. Look, it's a good question, and it's something that I don't get right all of the time. There are times in our job, and one of the things that I have been able to do as I've grown in experience is you learn to switch off a little bit more effectively when you drive out of the school gate at the end of the day. However, if you're a leader, like I believe the kind of leaders that we've talked about in terms of our own beliefs and also, you know, what we're modelling for others, you can't help but have an emotional attachment to the people that you work with. And when things aren't going right, it is harder to switch that switch off. And I look, for me, I think it's about being conscious of the fact that it's okay to worry about school outside of school, but don't let it kind of drive everything, because it will damage relationships at home. And often Nikki and I will come home and we'll talk about things that have happened during the day. That's part of that debriefing and part of that reflection. And whilst she's a wonderful principal in her own right, there's many ways that she approaches things that are different to me, and I really appreciate hearing her side of that. But there's also times where I've come home and we've just said, okay, we're going to have 20 minutes to talk school and that's it, you know. And I think that's really important as well. But I guess the converse is true too. There's times where where one of us has been tossing or turning at 3 a.m. and, you know, we feel that the tap on the shoulder say, get out, go and write down what's worrying you and it'll take you 20 minutes, put a plan together for tomorrow and then come and get some sleep, you know. So, but, yeah, look, you're absolutely right. And I think that I'm not sure how it is in the States, but in Australia we have a very high dropout rate of young teachers in their first years of teaching. Yep. Because, you know, there are still people out there who think you work, you know, 9 to 3, you get 12 weeks holiday a year and, you know, life is just so easy. And great teachers who put that work and they have that emotional investment in their kids know that there is so much more to our job than that. And I think that we lose a lot of those teachers very early in their career because they don't find that work-life balance. And I don't know if I have the magic answer for that. I guess it's being conscious of the fact that they do impact on each other and not letting that rule, you know, not letting that rule your home life in terms of what school has done to you that day. But knowing too that it's okay to worry about school, and it's going to happen because we're human and it's in our nature. Look, I don't even know, Daniel, if I've answered your question. I guess for me, it's just being conscious of it. It's knowing that they're two separate parts of my life, but yeah, they are linked. I can't help that. And just making sure that you provide time for, you know, for the kids and for the family as well. It's just really important.
Yeah, I think, I mean, to reflect back, what I heard you say is life is messy. You know, you're not going to be able to separate everything. And especially if you're the type of teacher and leader, the one that's really moving the needle on student achievement and making an impact in the community, you're going to have this emotional connection. So it's going to get messy. But the key phrase that I heard you say is being conscious. And so just recognizing maybe when it's out of control and you need to dial it back, or when you might need to put a little more work into it. And it really helps married guys like us too, to have a partner to check in with. I think it possibly could be a little more challenging for a single because someone might not be there to shake you out of, whatever rut you might be in. That's what I was hearing. I think you did answer the question quite well there. Let me ask you this. What do you do for fun? I've heard about rugby. I know you like cars, but what do you do for fun?
Yeah, good question. Spend a lot of time with the kids. We've moved into a fairly new subdivision, just on the southwestern outskirts of Sydney. And we've been in the house for 18 months, 2 years now, I think it is. So there's always something to do around the house in terms of gardening and things like that, which is fantastic. A lot of time with family, a lot of time with friends. I've got to admit too, one of being Aussie, one of my weaknesses is I love a beer. So my wife and I will share a glass of wine and a beer together, which is a nice way of unwinding as well.
Absolutely.
Sport. My kids all play sport, so there's the training, there's the Saturday sport that goes with all of that as well, which is all sort of part of it. Our little one is 18 months old now, a little bit older, about 20 months old now. So he always keeps us on our toes. And my 17-year-old, who's at the other end of the scale, he is learning to drive and will very soon have his own license. I've got one learning to walk, and he's fine now. But I had one learning to walk and one learning to drive at the same time. The one learning to drive was a lot more stressful, I've got to say. So it's just unwinding, a lot of time with family, a lot of time with friends, love watching sport. We go walking, bike riding around our new place where we are, a lot of work around the house, and just enjoying being with others.
That's great. So you mentioned Covey before in the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. Is there another book that you would recommend principals should read right now, and why would they? Why should they read it?
Well, you mean besides Blueprint for School Success, of course.
Sure.
Look. There's a couple from Australian universities, from the University of Melbourne, that I think would be outstanding for your for you and also for your listeners to have a look at. There's an Aussie professor, Steve Denham, who has produced a book, How to Get Your School Moving and Improving. And it is outstanding. It's a Bible for a lot of our principals in Australia. It talks about what works, and it's built on the work of a guy called John Hattie, who's actually a New Zealander. He's a Kiwi, but he's made his home in Australia, and he's also in Melbourne as well. And I would be more than happy to send you a summary of one of his papers, which is about teachers making the difference. And what John Hattie has done is he is big into metadata. He has looked at hundreds and hundreds of worldwide studies about what makes success for kids, and he has drawn together the differing factors of what makes the most improvement to student learning. His name's John Hattie. Steve Denham has written the book that's based on those findings about the practical implementation of that in your school. So both of those are outstanding, and I'm more than happy to send digital references through to both of those for you if you'd like to include those in the show notes.
Yeah, that'd be great.
An interesting thing, would you like to know what John Hattie found is the most important thing that makes a difference to kids learning?
Absolutely.
It's teacher feedback.
Teacher feedback.
And quality feedback to kids.
Yes.
Yeah. And not just good work. This is great. Congratulations. Good job.
Steps on how to improve.
It is real. Absolutely. He said that is the single most important aspect of teaching that will move kids, whether they are a struggler in terms of their academic progress or whether they're absolutely outstanding in terms of their academic success. It's the feedback that makes a difference to kids. Targeted feedback. This is what you've done well. However, this is what you need to do in order to move forward.
So this is the last question of the interview. You've been great. You are building a school from the ground up. You're not limited by budget. Your only limitation is your imagination. How would you create the school if you were given a blank slate and unlimited resources? What would be your top three priorities building this school?
Yeah, sure. Number one, it would have to be on Sydney Harbour because the view is so stunning. no, only kidding. Look. Number one, in terms of the philosophy and in terms of the work that would drive it is that I would want teachers who are committed to knowing their kids, and I mean deeply knowing their children, not only on a personal level about what makes them tick and what their strengths and weaknesses are, but number one, really knowing where they are academically. It comes back to that feedback again, and knowing what is the next step in their academic progression. You know, really differentiated curriculum for those kids. That would be the first thing. The second thing, and I think it builds on that, is time, and I mean on a daily basis, not just once a week at meetings or, you know, at the end of each school term when you're reflecting on your work. But I mean time every day for teachers to reflect on their lessons, to reflect on the learning of the children, and to do that in a collegial way where we can learn from each other. Look, you know, I taught this concept in mathematics. Most of my kids got it. I've got half a dozen that I just can't crack at this point in time. What do you suggest? What do you think? Okay, let's look at your work samples. Let's look at your formative assessment that you're doing. What can we do? You know, this sense of, yeah, they might be they might be my class, but they're our students and we're in this together. It would be time to do that. And I think that's, you know, people often hold Finland up as one of the countries where their educational progress and success has been outstanding. And that's one of the things that they do. They, you know, sometimes we're so hung up on maximizing teacher time in front of kids, you know, but it's really important that it's more about the quality of what we're doing than the quantity. Right. And 10 minutes of outstanding teaching is better than an hour of busy work. And And one of the things that Finland has is every day they have opportunities for teachers to get together to talk about the success of the lessons and the progress of their individual students. Mm. And that is something that I would love to build in. I would build time for teachers to do that. And then, of course, I guess being a person who's so committed to professional development, it would be ensuring that teachers have, you know, career paths and support for where they want to go, you know, high-quality professional learning and all of the resources that goes with that.
So that's great. Knowing your kids, that aspect of time and specifically for teachers really to get together and discuss student achievement and then, again, what you're already doing so well with your focus groups and professional development, but just that idea of pouring into your staff. That's a wonderful school that I'm sure every family would want to be a part of and teachers would want to work at. So Clayton, thank you so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Do you have any parting words of advice and what is the best way we could get a hold of you?
The best way to get a hold of me would be via email, I think is best. I'm more than happy to chat to anybody. Trying to work out the time difference between the two cities is always interesting. email is the best, and I'd be more than happy to provide my email address to go with the show notes, if that's okay with you, if we do it that way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, more than happy to do that. Look, words of advice. Number one, don't be too tough on yourself. Don't be afraid to have some fun at school too. A wise man once said to me, you know, take your job seriously, not yourself. Know that you're only human. Know you're working with human beings that will make mistakes. Look, and just the very fact that people are engaging in your website and listening to these podcasts shows that they've got a real passion for professional development and don't ever lose that passion for what you do.
That's great. Thank you, Clayton, again, for being a part of the show.
No problem. Thank you. Great to talk to you.
Better Leaders, thank you for joining us on the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Visit us at betterleadersbetterschools.com, a blog and podcast made specifically for you to help you meet your leadership potential. Please leave a 5-star rating and review for us. Click the podcast artwork and long press the Show Some Love link. This helps the show stay relevant in iTunes and reach a wider audience that wants to become a better leader. If you'd like to connect with me, there are also links in the show notes. The blog and podcast has an audience in over 100 countries, and I would love to connect with you. Connect via email, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, and the website.